take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Hey, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, it is Monday, June 1st, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Did you miss me? Been a while since we've done a live show, huh? 2 weeks we've been off. I have been all across North America, literally all across North America. I was in Anchorage, Alaska, and then I made my way Anchorage to Seattle, Seattle to Portland, then I flew Portland to Minneapolis, Minneapolis to D.C., then I flew D.C., Minneapolis to Portland, then I flew Portland to Denver to Aspen, Aspen to Denver to Portland, and here I am! Back at the desk and joining us, you can hear the delightful laugh of Jenny Ray McGee, who's joining us in studio today. Hi, Jenny Ray.
Hi, Russ. How are you doing today?
Well, I got to turn your mic on. There it is.
Hey. Hi, Russ. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Jenny Ray is going to be talking to us later in our 45 after segment. We've got a cannabis community chat. I met her at our most recent Portland Normal meeting and was stunned at this woman's story. I'm not even going to give any more away of it because I'll just let you hold on to it until
it's
then.
Like a secret, right?
That's right. We're gonna tease the audience till 45 after because my God, what a great story you've got. So stay tuned. If you want to hear a story of triumph against adversity, a story of medical marijuana miracles, stay tuned for Cannabis Community Chat at the end of the show. Also, speaking of medicine and science, of course, today is Monday, and so we'll be visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Q&A segment. You can call in live at 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. We got all sorts of topics to talk about here with Dr. Mitch, including hotboxing. Is it possible to fail a drug test because you were hotboxing with someone else? Not toking, but you were just in the same room with someone that's been smoking pot? New study on that says it might be possible. Also, an interesting study on hunter-gatherers in Africa and how their use of cannabis may be staving off intestinal parasites. Man, the stuff we learn on this show, it's going to be great. Stay tuned for that with Dr. Mitch coming up at 5:30. Also on the show today, in the drug war data mines, we're going to get some numbers from the United States Postal Service on how has the shipment of marijuana changed, if at all, since Colorado and Washington have legalized cannabis. Interesting numbers from the Postal Service coming up here in drug war data mining. Also, in behind the headlines today, we've been talking a lot about asset forfeiture, civil asset forfeiture. You know, when the cops steal your stuff because you're using marijuana. We've got a story of a medical marijuana patient in Michigan, and the cops stole her vibrator. Yeah, because I don't know, she was going to use it for a crime or something. Who knows? But we'll talk all about that in behind the headlines. But that all comes after the 420 radio news. And in the headlines today, can you believe it? Texas is a CBD-only state now. Texas has signed the law for CBD oils for epileptic kids. We've got data from the Washington Post on the rate of killings of civilians by police in this country. Probably won't shock you given the news recently. We've also got a story out of Indiana on the first church of cannabis, which has been granted tax-exempt status from the Internal Revenue Service. Oh my God, this is getting better and better. In Connecticut, we've got a story on the reduction of marijuana charges thanks to decriminalization in 2011. And some celebrity news. For marijuana from Susan Sarandon and against marijuana from Sir Paul McCartney. Yeah, MACA. Sir Paul, what's up with that? All that's coming up on the Russ Melville Show. And then stay tuned, hour two, Toker Talk Radio. Jenny Ray will sit in with us and we'll talk even more about medical marijuana miracles. It's the Russ Melville Show on 420radio.org. Stay tuned. We're right back after these sponsor messages.
You're tuned into the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. the Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, and I want you to know it's never too late to join me at the Funky Roller Rink every Thursday night, right here on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
I like it like that.
CannaCon is coming to Denver June 11th through 13th at the Colorado Convention Center. CannaCon features a huge expo of vendors for the latest products and services in the green rush. Plus, CannaCon brings together the top experts in cultivation, business development, and retail technology for 3 days of informative seminars. Also on June 9th, check out the CannaCon Open, a charity golf tournament to benefit epilepsy treatment and research. Get your tickets now at CannaCon.org. CannaCon.org is where you get your leg up on the green rush.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Melville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, June 1st, 2015. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has signed into law a bill allowing epilepsy patients to use medicinal oils containing a therapeutic component found in marijuana. Under the legislation, the state would be able to regulate and distribute the oils containing CBD, the non-euphoric component of marijuana, to patients whose symptoms have not responded to federally approved medication. The bill requires the state to regulate the distribution of the medication, directing the Texas Department of Public Safety to license at least 3 dispensing organizations by September 1, 2017, provided that at least that many applicants have met the state's requirements. Under the bill, only a neurologist or epileptologist would be able to prescribe CBD oil, which is only available to patients who have tried at least 2 traditional epilepsy medications and have not found them to be effective. The patient must also get approval of 2 doctors before being able to take advantage of the new law. Data collected by the Washington Post suggests that the number of people shot by U.S. police is twice as high as official figures claim. The paper said that during the first 5 months of this year, 385 people, more than 2 a day, were killed. The number of black people was disproportionately high among the victims, especially unarmed ones. Official statistics rely on self-reported figures from law enforcement agencies. They suggest about 400 people have been killed each year since 2008. Among the report's other findings, black people were killed at 3 times the rate of whites or other minorities when adjusted for local population. Most were armed, but 1 in 6 was unarmed or carried a toy weapon. 365 men and 20 women were killed. Most, 118 of them, were aged 25 to 34, while 94 of them were 35 to 44. 8 were children younger than 18. The First Church of Cannabis Incorporated has been approved by Indiana's Secretary of State under its controversial Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Even bigger than the state law approval, the church has been granted tax-exempt status by the IRS. Bill Levin is the self-described Minister of Love and Grand Poobah of the church. The First Church service is set for July 1st. It is no coincidence that July 1st is the day the Indiana Religious Freedom Restoration Act takes effect. The case U.S. versus Myers examined 5 factors to determine whether a church of marijuana was authentically religious: ultimate ideas, metaphysical beliefs, a moral system, comprehensiveness of beliefs, and the accoutrements of religion, such as important writings, a priesthood, and so forth, are required. Churches reap a vast array of tax advantages. They even include special rules limiting IRS authority to audit a church. A church, however, is not specifically defined in U.S. tax code. State court records show that Connecticut judges have granted more than 80% of requests to erase marijuana possession convictions since the state decriminalized small amounts of pot in 2011. Superior Court judges have approved 32 of 39 petitions to erase convictions for marijuana possession in the past 4 years. In 2011, the state downgraded possession of less than a half ounce of pot from a misdemeanor with potential jail time to a violation with fines ranging from $150 to $500. The number of erasures is small compared with the thousands of convictions for possessing small amounts of pot in Connecticut, but defense lawyers say they expect many more people to apply as word spreads about a recent state Supreme Court decision that gave people the right to request erasure. Sir Paul McCartney says he has given up marijuana after many years of indulgence and now prefers wine or, quote, a nice margarita, end quote. The former Beatle told the Daily Mirror that he doesn't want to set a bad example for his children and grandchildren by using marijuana. He said Saturday his decision is, quote, a parent thing and the last time I smoked was a long time ago, end quote. In contrast, pot proponent Susan Sarandon argues, quote, the world would be a better place, end quote, if people smoked weed instead of drinking. The Thelma and Louise star told High Times magazine's August issue, quote, it's absurd that more states haven't legalized it. It's an important source of income. You also see the reports on kids who have seizures that are prevented by medical marijuana. You see the relief it gives to vets. It's also a lovely way to socialize and be with people and to be with yourself and de-stress. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, June 1st, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
NORMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And today we're looking at a piece written by Jacob Sullum out on Forbes. He's also with Reason.com, good friend of the show. And it concerns the process of civil asset forfeiture. This is something that the attorneys at the NORMAL Aspen Legal Seminar went over in two or three different presentations. And folks, if you don't know what it is, it's basically legalized theft. It's basically cops being robbers. When they pull you over, they suspect you of some certain crime. They then seize your property under the doctrine that it was the illegal or ill-gotten gains of your illegal activities. It was originally passed when, you know, it was the 80s and it was Miami Vice. And you had these guys that were running cocaine and they were buying yachts and they were buying, you know, luxury cars. And the idea was, hey, these guys only got that stuff because they were selling coke and they were making illegal money. And so let's take their stuff and use that to fund the law enforcement to go after these guys. Well, this, of course, has been perverted beyond all recognition, and I choose that word specifically today for the story of a woman named Jennifer Hensey. She's out of Smith Creek, Michigan, and the cops raided her home. Now, she's a mother of four, and she's got multiple sclerosis. She uses marijuana for pain relief because her neurologist said that would be a good idea. And she's in the state of Michigan, so she's got a medical marijuana law to back her up. She's fully compliant. She's also a state-registered caregiver for five other patients. So she's complying with the state medical marijuana law. The charges were dismissed against her. There was a charge. The cops came and raided her for the 6 ounces of marijuana that she had, and they charged her with possession with intent to deliver because she had so much marijuana, despite the fact she's a medical marijuana patient, despite the fact she's caring for five other people. I mean, that's an ounce per person. We're not talking about a big stash here, right? Well, it went to court and the judge dismissed the charges, right? The St. Clair County judge dismissed the charges because she was following the medical marijuana law. The problem was when the cops went and raided her place, they took everything. Here's what another medical marijuana patient, Annette Shattuck, said the following about the raid. After they breached the door at gunpoint with masks, they proceeded to take every belonging in my house. The cops hall included bicycles, her husband's tools, a lawnmower, a weed whacker, her children's Christmas presents, $85 in cash taken out of her daughter's birthday cards, the kids' car seats and soccer equipment, vital documents such as driver's license, insurance cards, and birth certificates. But worse, the other lady, the one I talked about at first, Jennifer Hensey, she said they took everything, which included TV sets, ladders, her kids' cell phones, her iPads, and even her vibrator. That's right. They took her vibrator. I mean,
come on. You've got to be desperate, right?
First of all, it's like, how much could it have been worth?
Right. Maybe $3. Right?
Is it like it's solid gold platinum encrusted vibrator or something, right?
To give better hobbies.
I guess so. So they raid this lady, right? And so the cop or the court drops the charges. They say, you know, intent to deliver, no. Illegal, no. You're perfectly legal.
As you should.
But she goes back to the court and says, well, can I get my stuff back? Now that I'm not a criminal, now that you wasn't breaking law, can I get my stuff back? What's the guy here? The prosecutor. She says, the prosecutor came out to me and said, well, I can still beat you in civil court. I can still take your stuff. And that's absolutely true, folks. You don't have to be convicted of a crime. In fact, you can be found innocent of the crime that they took the stuff from you about, and you still have to go court to get your stuff back. You still have to go prove your stuff wasn't illegal. She has to go prove that she bought that vibrator, not with any marijuana money, but that it was a perfectly legal vibrator.
I hope you kept the receipt. You know?
Like, who keeps the receipts for these things, right? Wow. I don't think so. But these civil forfeiture laws are just disgusting. They had a story in the Detroit Free Press talking about people, the cops seizing assets without even filing charges against people. I just was reading tech guide that came across in email before I got onto the show about new technology to allow the cops to be able to scan, like if they pull you over on the side of the road and they get to your wallet and they see that you got a lot of cash, you know, they normally take the cash. Now they got a system where they can pull your debit cards and run the debit card and seize the money that's in your prepaid debit card account or your bank debit card account. This is nothing more than legalized highway robbery. Police seized more than $24 million in assets from people just in the state of Michigan in 2013. That's the latest data they have. Here in the state of Oregon, it's like $3.7 million. It's ridiculous amounts of money where people aren't even charged with a crime and they still lose their stuff. Now, there is good news. This is getting more play. More people are understanding that this is a travesty of justice. The state of New Mexico recently passed a law that ends the practice of civil asset forfeiture. And right now in Michigan, in response to these cases, there's the House Judiciary Committee chairman. His name is Clint Kesto, a Republican, who's proposing a law that would require the police to keep track of all their forfeitures, to report them to the state police, to prohibit the forfeiture of vehicles used to purchase small amounts of marijuana. Really, they were using this to, like, if you were driving into the city and picking up a dime bag, they'd take your whole car. for that. And now if this thing passes, they won't be able to do that. Kesto says we must bring culpability and transparency to the system and rein in the ability of police to indiscriminately seize the property of innocent citizens. And if you want to know more about this, go to my SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/radicalrust. Check out some of that stuff from the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar, where the experts on this talked about it for the past weekend. It's some really good information. Well, that sound means it's 20 after. It means it's 4:20 in Denver, Colorado. So, Jenny Ray, I don't know if you know the rules here, but we have a very important safety meeting we need to get to.
Oh, I'll be the first one there.
All right. We'll see you at the safety meeting. We're back with the drug war data mining right after this.
Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah, come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Whether it's a vape pen, a pipe, or a bong, you can find it right now on weedshop.com. We got dab rings, nails, and ship it fast, whipping any of a competitor's glass. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. In the data mines today, we're taking a look at the phenomenon of mailing weed. You've done it. Some of you have done it out there. You know what I'm talking about. Putting together a little parcel box or an envelope and shipping ahead a joint or a few bowls to your future destination, wherever it is you might be going to. We know it's difficult to take things with you. You worry about getting pulled over. You worry about the cops. You worry about TSA at the airport. So sometimes people mail their weed. And this has been a concern for the prohibitionists for years. They have told us, you know, we can't legalize marijuana because, by God, the first state that legalizes marijuana, next thing you know, everybody's going to be shipping marijuana out of the state. It's going to be a diversion to the black market. We're going to flood the market with all this legal weed into the illegal states. The sky will fall. Cats and dogs will live together. Disasters of biblical proportions. But guess what? The data do not bear that out. Not at all. This is information we just got from the U.S. Postal Service. The U.S. News and World Report did some Freedom of Information Act requests and got information from the U.S. Postal Service. And there's three stats that we're going to go over. Marijuana parcel intercepts. And that would be like how many packages did they find that had pot in them? Pounds of marijuana seized. How much actual marijuana did we get out of those packages? And then non-pot drug-related parcel seizures, like other drugs that people, you know, cocaine or meth or mushrooms or whatever else they might be shipping. What's been going on since marijuana legalization has happened? Well, in the fiscal year of 2012, okay, the fiscal year of 2012 is, that's like 6 months prior to 2012, right? You know, fiscal years are shifted, right? The fiscal year for 2014 started on October 1st, 2013. Fiscal years start like a quarter early, right? So the fiscal year 2012 would be like October of 2011 through September of 2012. So that'd be before anybody legalized. The 2012 figures are before anyone legalized. Then your 2013 figures would be in the first year of legalization, but not access, right? Because remember, the states, Colorado, Washington, they first legalized, they didn't have their pot shops up immediately. There was a few months a longer lag in Washington state. And then fiscal year 2014, that gives us the fiscal year where 3 months before the pot shops open in Colorado and 3 months after they open in Washington state. So the most recent fiscal year data is when we had pot shops in two states. So check this out. Before anybody ever legalized, there were about 7,600 marijuana parcel intercepts. In 2013, that went up almost 20% to 9,100 parcel intercepts. 1,500 more packages were caught after Washington and Colorado legalized, but before they had pot shops. And in the most recent numbers, they're down to 7,990. They went down 12%. So in the year that pot shops existed, the shipments went down because now people don't have to mail their weed. They can just get it.
Walking and buy it, right?
That's right. Just walk in and buy it. Now, the pounds, now our opponents, they say, well, yeah, but 7,900 is still higher than 7,600, right? Before we legalized, it was 76. Now it's 79, almost 8,000. So it's still higher, even though it went down this year. But then that's belied by the next stat, the pounds of marijuana seized. In 2012, there was 42,000 pounds of marijuana seized. In fiscal year 2013, there were 45,000 pounds. That was up 7%. Most recent, 39,000 pounds, down 12.7%, and lower than the 2012 number of 42,000. So while they might have a few 300 more packages that they've caught, those packages have less weed in them. People are shipping a lesser amount of weed. Now, let's compare that to the amounts for non-drugs, right? They're non-drug captures. In 2012, it was about 3,700, 3,722. After weed became legal, it went up 15% to 4,200. The following fiscal year, it's up again by 7%. So as pot shops came into being, the shipments went down for pot, but they continued to go up for other drugs. This kind of tells us that when it comes to people that want to ship drugs back and forth, their ability to access it legally seems to have an effect, since the illegal drugs didn't go down at all. Now, of course, Kevin Sabet and the folks out there at Project Sam, they don't believe any of it. He says, quote, "It's a slight drop. I don't think it's particularly meaningful, especially since it's an increase since 2012. We don't know what reasons would produce a one-year drop. You know, how about the one reason that's the most obvious, that we've had pot shops?" Now, Diane Goldstein, she's our friend from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. She's on the board of LEAP. She says, quote, "Most of the shipping that's being done by people in the illicit is being done by people in the illicit market. And those are the people we're trying to get out of the business." That seems to be working. You know, it's like, what good? Why do I have to go have someone ship me some pot when I can just go to a pot shop myself? And even the DEA's numbers are showing decreases. The calendar year of 2014, DEA seized 74,000 kilograms of marijuana. That's down from 270,000 the year before and down from 725,000 the year before in 2010. In fact, the 74,000 kilograms of marijuana the DEA seized is their smallest haul in 29 years. It's the smallest amount they have ever seized in a one-year period. Figure that out, Kevin.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who is also back from a series of travels. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day.
Oh, I hope you're doing fine. Last time I saw you, you were doing great.
Indeed. I was having a splendid evening.
Yes, you were. We've got a lot of serious stuff to discuss on today's show. And I want to remind people, if you got a question, get it in our chat room or call us live at 84-420-RADIO. But Dr. Mitch, want to introduce you to Jenny Ray McGee, who's in the studio with us today. Say hi, Jenny.
Hey, doctor.
My pleasure.
How are you?
Having a great night.
Good. I have a question for you later.
Oh, go for it.
Go ahead right now. Let's start off with it.
Okay. Well, I want to know if there is any research being done today in the industry about injecting oil into your muscles. My muscles live in atrophy, or they were living in atrophy, and I'm trying to pull them out as quickly as possible. And, you know, when you use topical creams, that kind of instantly eliminates that pain. But I just want to know if there is anybody out there that's taking oils and kind of injecting it in there like Botox, and if the answer to that question is no, if they're just waiting for a lab rat, how do I sign up?
As it turns out, there is a transdermal, it isn't really like an injection so much as kind of a scratcher that has been used, but it doesn't seem to be that much more effective than topicals, so I'm reluctant to make a big deal out of it.
Okay, good to know. All right. I just wanted to know.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get that studied sometime. We always come up with ideas for new studies here. Let's start with giving Dr. Mitch here the first word. There's a bunch of stories. I mean, we've been gone for a couple of weeks here, so what would you like to talk about, Dr. Mitch?
There's a great review of the cannabis and headache literature. As you mentioned, there's that crazy hot box situation where the secondhand pot smoke leads to a positive drug test. We got the pot pill not helping with dementia symptoms, but when you look close, they gave him such a low dose, I don't think it would have gotten a fly high. And there's some wild data on teens ending up shorter when they're using cannabis early in life, but of course they weren't randomly assigned. We just got tons of crazy stuff to cover.
All right. Well, that one is the one I thought was weird. I saw this thing, you know, that said if you smoked pot as a teen, you could have been taller. Like, I guess, you know, had I not smoked pot, I could have had 8 more points of IQ and 2 more inches of height. What's going on with this number?
Unfortunately, there's a poor understanding of causality when it comes to cannabis literature. So we do have a sample here where essentially the folks who used cannabis early in life did end up being the ones who were shorter longitudinally, and they also weighed a little less, but they weren't randomly assigned. So it's not as if they said, here, you smoke pot, you don't. It could very well have been folks who were already kind of little or small ended up sort of being the ones who ended up using cannabis. So it's too strange to tell. And then when you take a close look at the hormones involved, the cannabis users actually had more testosterone but less growth hormone, so that's just kind of strange. And then they jump on this cortisol and stress thing. My wife's a big cortisol researcher, and this just doesn't quite follow the notion that cannabis is somehow acting as a stressor. So I'm afraid what they have here is a bunch of guys who happen to be small and who happen to use cannabis, but there's really no way to make any sort of causal conclusions about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking like this reminds me of when they say, oh, the kids who smoke pot have worse grades. It's like, well, no, maybe they're like dyslexic or frustrated in school and then they smoke pot, right?
In fact, those data, you look back to when they were in sixth grade, long before they were probably smoking much pot, and they had lower grades then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, in the case of guys, if you're a smaller guy, well, you're not getting picked to be on the sports teams. You're not the popular guy, whatever. Maybe that's a stressor.
We haven't even talked about standardization and like testing, so we won't go down that road.
I look at public schools these days and I think the way they're trying to teach kids would make you want to smoke pot, but it's a whole other subject.
We won't go there today.
All right, let's we got some questions from our chat room. Speed Limit wants to know is whether or not the hemp oil derived from seeds versus the hemp oil derived from the plant, is any one or the other better for human consumption?
Well, so it depends on what you're looking for, but the seed-based oils tend to have all these neat nutrients that you wouldn't normally get. They're pretty good with trace minerals and stuff like that, but it's not psychoactive at all, and we don't have tons of data on it medicinally. We just have, oh, here's how it is. And in fact, that goes back literally millennia, where people were using that as a food and, you know, in all kinds of cooking and things like that for years. But we don't have any sense for its medicinal properties. Mm,
okay. Let's get to another one of these strange stories out there. You know, a lot of folks have had to face the workplace drug test. And some folks, when they get caught on the workplace drug test, will say, but I didn't smoke pot. I was just in a room with a bunch of pot smokers. Honest. So they did this study on hotboxing and secondhand pot smoke. What can you tell us about that?
Well, so sure enough, they did end up getting a sample of folks who ended up testing positive for marijuana, even though they didn't actually smoke it. But when you look at the chamber they were in, it was basically 10 by 13 by 7. So about the size of my bathroom.
Yeah.
And they literally just smoked it out. So I can't make too much of this. If you want to cite this, if you do test positive at your workplace, by all means, but I encourage everybody to refuse those workplace drug tests. So.
It's like telling the HR person, hey, I was trapped in an elevator.
Yeah, with Cheech Chong and Keith Strupp.
And Harold and Kumar, and they were all there.
I got my start in smoking pot through hotboxing, but it was like four blunts within a 20-minute, you know, time frame in between Lawrence and Topeka and Kansas.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. All right, so don't rely on this for the excuse. Is that our takeaway from this?
Yes.
I have done that same drive, and I wish I had hotboxed it.
Yeah, no kidding. We have another question from our chat room. John Thomas would like to know about vaporization and whether or not vaporization eliminates any sort of contaminations like pesticides and fertilizers.
We don't have tons of data. It seems to make sense pharmacologically. Certainly the concern about some of the heavy metals and things like that, it would make sense. But nobody's been able to pay to actually have that part analyzed.
Oh, okay. Now, vaporization, of course, is working by activating the cannabinoids to their vaporization point, right? They turn to the pot steam.
Exactly. Yeah.
So is it that the pesticides and fertilizers might vaporize at different temperatures and then thus not get?
Exactly. And so some of the ammonia-based ones actually seem to vaporize at a lower temperature than THC, but the ones that are more metallic seem to need a higher temperature in order to vaporize. So it has the potential, but we don't actually have a study that has looked at that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, how would that might that differ from someone who's smoking the buds directly? I mean, combustion heats things to a much higher temperature, so that might be more likely to get more of these contaminants.
Unfortunately, yes. Okay. So it just higher temperature means more elements have the opportunity to end up in the smoke.
Mm, okay, so yet another endorsement for vaporization.
As you know, I really think it's the way to go.
All right. Now, a story came across today from the Daily Mail. I thought this was really interesting about hunter-gatherers and whether or not they smoked cannabis for health purposes. And they followed this African tribe and found that they didn't have this common stomach parasite. I mean, this is some interesting stuff.
Well, I feel like the rationale requires, shall we say, an anthropologist's impression of causality. No one is consciously saying, oh, I'm smoking cannabis in order to fight parasites. But it turns out the ones who didn't have this particular parasite. And so it's certainly consistent with the idea that maybe they were doing this outside their own awareness or something like that. And I kind of like that. There are a number of habits that we sort of have that have benefits that sometimes we're not consciously able to articulate. But I don't want anybody to think, hey, smoking cannabis is a way for me to battle parasites. It's just not an efficient way to do so. This is a tribe in Central Africa that I'm sure if they had, you know, nice antibiotics, they turn to those instead.
Sure. Okay. Another story that we hear from time to time, especially in the red states, are where patients who want to use medical cannabis also are using some sort of opioid painkiller, and their doctor makes them make the choice. It's like, if you're using pot, you can't use opioids, right? Because you're drug seeking, and they worry about addiction. There's a new study out here that it talks about the combination of medical marijuana and opioids for pain relief and its effect on addiction and dependence. What's the news out of this one?
Well, and this is something we've been harping on time and again. Yes, in fact, people can use lower doses of opioids and fewer of them and not, in fact, be at elevated risk for any kind of substance abuse problem. There was a time when they thought maybe the medical cannabis use was some kind of marker for an addictive propensity or something like that, and it's just not showing out. And this was in JAMA. You know, this was we've already got data suggesting fewer opiate deaths in states that have medical marijuana laws, and we got yet another data set here saying, you know, again, not randomly assigned, but folks who are using these in tandem are not ending up with dependent symptoms with the opiates. I really feel like it's ill-advised to make people choose this way. And in fact, your chances of opiate risk dependence are probably lower because you can keep your dosage lower.
Yeah. I hope we get to a point of understanding on this where making someone make a choice like that would be medical malpractice. I mean, that seems a ways off, though.
Well, what other drug combination does that really happen? I mean, either it's a toxic thing that's going to be harmful in combination pharmacologically. You never have to do that with any other drugs.
Yeah. All right, folks. We're just about out of time here with Dr. Mitch. But remember, if you want to get your question answered privately, you can always send in to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Dr. Mitch is the author of Understanding Marijuana and other fine books about marijuana. Pick one up today from one of your reputable booksellers out there. And Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us on Mondays here at 420 Radio.
Looking forward to next week.
All right, I am too, and it's good seeing you out in Washington, D.C.
Oh, man, delightful.
All right, stay tuned, folks. We've got a great story coming up. If you love the Dr. Mitch segment and you love hearing about medical marijuana and learning more about the medical industry and their practices, our guest today in studio, Jenny Ray McGee, is going to blow your mind. Are you ready, Jenny Ray?
I was born ready.
Oh, I can tell you were. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Jenny Ray McGee in our cannabis community chat. Stick around.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people
of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. I've said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com and follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life, conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult marijuana prohibition in our Cannabis Community Chat.
Welcome back, everybody. Special Cannabis Community Chat today. We've got a guest live in studio. Jenny Ray McGee is with us. How are you doing, Jenny Ray?
I'm fantastic. How are you today?
I'm great. And I got to set the stage for folks since we're on radio and podcast so people can really get the whole impact of this, because I met you at the Portland Normal meeting we had just a couple weekends ago. And so I'm approached by this young lady who, I got to say, off of first impression, you remind me of Radon Chong.
Okay.
Did you ever get that?
No.
Okay. So, Tommy Chong's daughter, Radon Chong. So kind of a nice, you know, sweet, kind of light colored mocha skin and curly ringlet hair and a bright broad smile and glistening brown eyes and just full of energy and buoyant and popping around here and wanted to tell me her story. And then when I heard your story, I was like, you can't be the person you were just telling me about. You can't be the same person. So tell folks about this incredible transformation from medical cannabis that you've experienced.
Yes. So I usually start my story with a question of, can I please have 5 minutes of your time? Because if I get past the first 90 seconds and somebody's still with me, you know what I mean?
That's
they're
going
to listen to the end. Okay. So that's how I start. So I began using cannabis in 2010. And prior to that, I was one of the people that thought cannabis was the gateway drug to heroin. So since we got over that, I started using cannabis because I was born with a medical condition that went misdiagnosed for 25 years. And I had pain that felt like somebody was stabbing a butcher knife into the middle of your bone and slowly turning it around while they held a match to your skin. Because I mean, every day you talk, your shoulders, your hips, your ankles, anything that you can think hurts, every muscle in your body is painful. And I, funny, you should mention earlier, did not want to take oxys. I did not want to take hydros. I did not want to get addicted to morphine. That's what it is. It's an addictive prescription creation that the pharmaceutical industries make in order to be a billion-dollar corporation. And we allow it. So I thought that smoking cannabis you made me a pothead. And my friends and my family did it, but I didn't want any part of that. Until I started hanging out with them for hours on end, days after days after days. And every once in a while, I'd take a hit or I'd be in a room for 15 hours. And I'd be like, man, I feel like a different person.
I feel great.
I feel fantastic, you know? And I'm like, why do I feel so great?
And, you know, our opponents will say, oh, well, you were just high. You just mentally felt good, but...
Okay, so when you can physically feel your body and you can see, because you have a knot that's so large it's visible by the naked eye from under your skin, and you take a hit of marijuana and that eliminates or starts to relax, that's not something that you imagine, or that's not something that you dream.
That's not made up.
No, and you could, I bet there is a traditional medicine route that will allow us to prove that. So I, being a logical person, person said, oh, well, if this makes me feel better and it eliminates the pain that's in my body, why don't I start to see if I use it myself? What will happen, you know, if I'm a consistent user? And what I realized is when I used marijuana and I was not healthy, I could walk.
Yeah.
I could live a normal life. And I'm talking having the ability to feed yourself, get up, go to work, take a shower, live life. Things that people take for granted on a daily basis is all I wanted to do. Anything after that was extra. I was so proud of myself every morning for getting up and just making it, you know what I mean, to the bathroom to get ready. I'm like, sure. High five, you did it. Anything else is a bonus, right? And so as I was getting ready for work every day, I would smoke a bowl or a bowl and a half. And even two bowls. And it was because that would get me to lunchtime where I'd want to smoke again, which would get me to after work where I would smoke again, which would get me mm-hmm. to before bed where I would smoke again. I began to eat because I have a metabolic disorder. So marijuana helped me to want to be hungry because I was never hungry. I never wanted to eat. I could eat something and have that last me 3 days.
Oh.
It's not normal.
No.
But I was feeding my body poison, and I thought that my muscles, or I thought that my throat was closing up because everything that I was feeding my body was poison. And so marijuana would at least give me the sensation to want to eat.
Yeah.
So, but then it also helped eliminate my pain. And I lived in the state of Kansas. And in the state of Kansas, if I were to tell my employer that I used marijuana, or if I were to tell, you know, a family member or a friend that considers it to be, like they would consider me a criminal.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because it's an ignorant opinion that they haven't researched it and they don't know why I need it, but they think because I smoke that makes me a criminal. And I didn't want to live in a place that thought that of me. So that's how I got to meeting you.
Yeah, good for you.
Okay.
Get the hell out of Kansas.
All day. And anybody living in Kansas, you should contact maybe your governor or any of your legislative members and let them know that you smoke cannabis and you want it legal because that is your form of medicine.
Yeah. Now, have you had interaction with your medical professionals and explained this to them? What's their reaction?
In 2010, when I started smoking cannabis and I approached William Graff at Yale University, I asked him for Marinol because Marinol is, you know, weed, but in a pill form that the population deems acceptable, even
sure.
though Ritalin is legal crack, you know?
Right, right.
So I asked for that and he responded to me, you just like to smoke pot. And
drug I'm seeker.
Like, yeah, you're a drug seeker. And I'm like, no, man, you don't understand. This helps me and I don't want to be a criminal because I wouldn't do well in prison, okay? I'm too bubbly for prison.
Oh, yeah,
and
too sweet for prison.
They're like, oh, do you want to fight? And I'm like, no. But so I didn't want to be considered a criminal. And so I asked for that and he told me no. But Marinol and researching Marinol as a pill actually kicked off my hypothesis, which led me to curing myself because I do not have 9 neurological disorders. I have an endocrine disorder instead. And so that was the first indicator because my doctor January of 2011 told me that my muscles were healthy, but I had atrophy of a person that should be in a wheelchair 3 years ago, and he couldn't understand why I was walking.
And this is because they thought you had all these other things that you didn't have.
And they gave me pills.
And that made it worse.
That created neurological symptoms in me that then they started treating, right? So when he would ask me the question of, or when he would state, I don't know how you're walking, because I lived in the state of Kansas where marijuana is illegal, I would say will and determination. But mm-hmm. internally, what I meant was, well, I smoke a little bit of green, not a little bit, a lot. And that's, you know what I mean? And I also, when you were mentioning earlier, weed calms my thoughts so that I can be a better writer. And writing my story and what I've been through and mm-hmm. teaching people to raise the level of raise the standard of expectation from the medical community, that is what I want to do forever. And I think medical cannabis is at the leading edge of that.
Wow, that's amazing. Your story, it caught me. It caught Scott Herbage. He was there at the meeting as well. And we were both just amazed by this. So describe getting out of Kansas and what it's been, you know, just the difficulty in trying to uproot yourself and move to a whole nother state.
Yes. So, and if we run out of time, this might have to finish on
some long hour two.
I'm no long-winded. Problem. Okay. So, I was able to take a bath, that had THC, and, I did that for myself, and I was laying in the tub, and I came to the realization that I did not want to live somewhere where I could not access this when I could move, I don't know, 2,000 miles across the country and be closer to a beach and and get access to this on a daily basis. And I told myself that if I could get up every morning and take a bath like this, I would become a morning person. I said I'd skip to work, and I'm not a morning person at all. So I took the bath. It was January 1st of 2015. And the next day, I decided that I was no longer going to live in the state of Kansas. So I liquidated my only asset so that I wouldn't back out.
Yeah.
And then I practiced that weekend giving my 2-week notice to my boss. I had found I was ready to commit no matter what. So I had found a position that I thought that I would be eligible for here in Portland. And I told her that I was going to apply for it, but if I was not given it, that I would be leaving either way. And so I applied for it. They gave it to me. I shipped my car across the country. And as I boarded the plane, I went to Phoenix, Arizona. And in Phoenix, Arizona, I was treated for my condition. I have something called hypothyroidism type 2. Mm-hmm. And it means that my thyroid underproduces. And I got treatment the week that I decided to move to Portland. So this goes from I wasn't able to walk 2 blocks to the next day I walked 5 miles on the beach. And it was really exciting to me because I had moved up here to teach people how to be independently disabled and to access medical cannabis. And I still need medical cannabis because my muscles are still in atrophy. And I am every day in the gym, 3 hours a day.
Wow.
Physically moving my muscles, like my foot, I can't turn it counterclockwise. So it's my hand physically moving it counterclockwise. Mm. Right now, all I'm doing is something called foam rolling, where you lay on a roller and you find those knots in your body and you pop them to release them.
My wife's got one of those things.
Oh my goodness.
She swears by it.
It is great unless your muscles have been in atrophy for 25 years and then it might as well be your worst enemy. But I do it every day because I want health more than anything in the entire world, and I deserve health. And my favorite thing to do before I go foam, every single time before I go foam roll, I smoke 1 to 4 bowls because I know that it's going to be 3 times easier to do it. And if I could smoke in the gym, as I was doing it, I would. If I could smoke in the hot tub after the fact, I would. But you can't even do it in public at this point in time.
Yeah.
But if you can smoke a cigarette in public, if you can drink a beer in public, I should be able to take my medication in public. Because it's not even like I'm asking you to shoot heroin into my veins in public. You know what I mean? Right. I am asking to use a plant that comes from the ground that makes my body be able to function in society. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
It is not a bad thing. And you have a tenacity and a will and a drive that I know is going to take you far in this movement. And I'm so excited to have you here in Oregon and in the movement in general speaking out for stuff like this. I mean, I can't wait to get you on. You want to speak at Seattle Hemp Fest? I'll get you on a stage.
Yes,
I'll get
every you on a day.
We're going to make
day.
That happen. Yeah. We'll take you down to the Northern California Cannabis Cup. I've got a presentation I'm doing. I'll give you 10 minutes of it.
Great. Perfect.
I want more people to hear Jenny Ray's story. And if you want to follow Jenny Ray on Twitter, you can. It's JennyRay429. JennyRay429 on Twitter. And you got other plugs to give out?
I do. I have a website. It's called livingonestepatatime.com. I've blogged about this entire journey. I also have a YouTube channel where you can watch videos. I speak in depth about the process of getting helped and my cure. And then I also have a book, because I wrote a book about this process. It's called What's Wrong With Me. And if Russ lets me come back, I will tell you how I found my cure and how I use cannabis to do that.
Lets you? I think I'll have a mutiny in the chat room if I don't let you.
All right, great. This sounds like a plan.
All right, stay tuned for hour two. We got more with Jenny Ray. We'll talk more about her story and take your calls as well. If you got a question for Jenny Ray, we're ready to talk.
But that's all we got for hour one. Stay tuned. Hour two is next. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
We gotta go do a session.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it.